The stocks discussed on PTS Radio are not in any way a solicitation or recommendation to buy, sell, or hold. If considering acting on information presented, we recommend that you seek out a licensed professional for advice. Get ready for the radio show that is all about trading. It's your weekly dose about how to trade your account. Here is your host, Mel Raymond.
Welcome to PTS Radio, the broadcast that is all about trading. I'm Mel Raymond, and we have a great broadcast for you today. Today's broadcast is brought to you by Noble Trading, a leading provider for the direct access trading of equities, options, and futures, all from a single account and platform, and TradingComputers.com, offering superior products to their customers at competitive prices. All computers are built in the USA by well-trained technicians. If you are a trader, you will want to trade using the Falcon Trading System. We have a lot of good information for you today, including two interviews, one with PTS coach Mike Mizunas, and a return to the broadcast of Jay Woods. Every time Jay is on the broadcast, we get lots of emails. I want to thank all of you, by the way, for sending your emails and comments. They've been just great, and we read them all. Let's begin today's broadcast, as we always do, by looking at the PTS radio page. You can find that at ptsradio.com and just follow the links. Our PTS setups for the past week did very well. As you know, we only had a four-day trading week, but we still managed to come in with a full load of trades. The best performances being put in by WINN, W-Y-N-N, for $4.69. And SPG, also for $4.69. The trades then ran all the way down to a short on AEM for $1. Interestingly, AEM was held at the 200-day moving average all week. That's a gold mining stock, and somebody decided it's not going down. Now, we gave you two complimentary setups last week. AEM, we managed to get $2.41 out of it if we were patient. And another short for $1.89. It kept trying, but it couldn't break the 200-day moving average. PNC, the other complimentary setup, went long for $2.88 and short for $1.47. So there you go. Four trades for the price of two. Of course, the price being free. Now, as we go into the quick analysis of the markets, let's keep this in mind. I was just reading John Malden, an economist and financial planner, and he says this week the market seemed to like financial stocks and was buoyed on news that Pulte Homes would buy Centex to create the largest U.S. home builder. And with banks having some room to adjust their write-downs as mark-to-market is modified, the market saw significant increases in the financial sector. Everywhere I keep hearing the old saw that the market predicts a recovery about 6 months out. So won't we see a recovery in the fourth quarter of 2009? If you look at the earnings estimates for 2009, that is what is suggested. Bloomberg reports that profits at S&P 500 companies probably fell 38% on average in the first quarter. The stretch of quarterly declines is the longest since at least the Great Depression. Data compiled by S&P and Bloomberg show. However, earnings may drop 31% in the second quarter and 18% in the next, before gaining 74% in the last 3 months of the year. Banks are projected to account for all of the rebound in the final quarter. Without financial companies, the gains turn into a 5% decline. If you happen to believe what I just read, if you happen to believe the hype that's being given out now about finding a bottom, then perhaps you would like to invest, maybe buy some stocks. Now, what do some other economists think? Well, they think that we're going to have some sharp declines, and possibly this summer a move down to where the Dow may be 1,000. That's another school of thought. Somebody very kindly, I want to thank you, you know who you are, sent me a film from Argentina warning us about what can happen to the economy and to money specifically. The film was called, Take Your Money Out of the Bank. There really is no way we can correct from the situation we're in right now. The market might. The market goes all over the place and seems to work on perception rather than a reality. But let's take a little further look at the markets. First of all, at the INDU, the Dow Index, it's moving up. As you know, it has plenty of room to continue moving up. It's not at all overbought. I want to move over to the S&P 500, SPX, same thing. It's starting to get overbought, but still has plenty of room to move up if it wishes to. If I move to the diamonds, however, I can get a little look at volume, and I see that buying is gradually drifting down. So we're not going to move up if we run out of buyers. The spiders, the SPY, show very much the same thing, a decline. Now, that decline in volume could simply be that it was a holiday week. Maybe buying will continue in, but we're starting to get very overbought on the RSIs, if you watch them. The day, however, has got a long way to go to get overbought. The VIX did finally break through 40 this past week. It closed down to 36.53, and looks like Monday morning, if it continues going down, we will have an up open. The VIX is starting to approach a little bit of the oversold territory. It could reverse from here, but it doesn't look like it's going to from the chart patterns. At least not at the beginning of the week. As usual, I spent some time reading Bill Bonner this week, and he talks about his book, Financial Reckoning Day, where they argued that the United States was following Japan into a long on-again, off-again slump. We wrote the book in the early 2000s, and we were proven wrong almost immediately. Instead of a long Japan-like slump, the U.S. economy took off and soon turned itself into the biggest bubble the world had ever seen. Now that bubble has burst, everything is beginning to turn Japanese. The financial crisis is straightening our hair. It's taking inches off our height. Japan never got out of its slump. Instead, asset prices in Japan are lower than ever, and the Japanese economy is contracting faster than any economy did since the Great Depression. And to make matters worse, deflation is back and consumer prices are now falling again. But the difference between this bout of deflation and other periods of deflation in Japanese economic history over the last 18 years is that now it's no longer alone. Switzerland is already in deflation too, and so is China. And China has lost over 20 million jobs since the beginning of the crisis. Asset prices have collapsed, and now consumer prices are going down too. Will the U.S. soon have falling consumer prices? Will it finally follow Japan into a long slump? Yes, and maybe no. There's a big difference between the United States on one side and Japan and China on the other. The United States is not an exporter. It's an importer. Nor is it a creditor. It's a debtor. When the Japanese economy fell off the truck in the early 90s, the people had savings. They could wait out the correction. They didn't have to cut spending and increase savings. They were saving enough already. In fact, when consumer prices fell, Japan's savers got richer. They could buy more things with less money. But the U.S. can't wait out a correction in comfort. Its people have debts, not savings. Deflation doesn't make them richer. It makes them poorer. And in order to pay their bills, they have to cut spending and increase savings. This puts further downward pressure on the economy and creates a very uncomfortable situation for Americans. The more they save to pay their debts, the more the economy contracts, and the more it contracts, the less revenue they have available to save. But wait, isn't there a way out? Isn't there some magic the Fed can perform? Some abracadabra perhaps from Tim Geithner? What if we get a lot of smart people together in a room? Won't they be able to figure something out? Bill Bonner says, we don't know, but we wouldn't bet on it. And he says, tomorrow we're going to write about what we learned from Argentina. Of course, I've already seen the films from Argentina, and what they're doing in Argentina is warning us, take your money out of the banks. So we have these two schools of thought, the one side saying, I think we found a bottom and put your money in the market, and the other side saying, are you kidding? The bad news is yet to come. The credit card bubble, for example, has got to burst. All the defaults that are going to happen there. And if you really read, many banks are not even putting on the books the houses that they have foreclosed. That large inventory, in many cases, remains unreported. So to wrap up this section, in the long term, I expect the markets to head for the bottom and stay there. I've heard it described as an L-shaped bottom. Now, you know what a U-bottom is and a V-bottom. Well, an L-bottom hits the ground and stays there. I've seen projections from people I respect very much stating that the earliest they can see the market starting to rebound would be 2020. That's quite a way off. Now, let's talk about the short term. This coming week, I expect the rally to continue with the possibility of a strong correction. It might not be very long term. It might be a day or 2 days. But if for no other reason than profit taking and a lot of uncertainty, it won't take much to take the overbought condition we're in now and run it back down a few points. And we're ready for them. Oh, and something else. This week is options expiration and the beginning of earnings season. So there's every possibility that there will be some kind of sharp correction in the very near future. We're here with Mike Mizunas, PTS certified coach. Mike, it's been quite a week trading, and it looks like this coming week could be just as exciting.
I think so too, Mel. The market has been kind of surprising lately, actually, with the move up that it's had.
Do you have any tips that you can give our traders that might help during the coming week?
I thought we'd talk a little bit about a daily trading plan. For most traders who are doing well in the market, in the morning when they get up, they establish what they want to trade. They look for symbols. They look at the charts. If they're looking at possibility of an option on a move, they looked at the options chain, they've picked out a strike price, they've just gone over the possibilities of what the potential costs are, and they've got a lot of this ready out of the way. When the market opens, if you're trading a stock, is it a move that you've already considered prior to the market? Have you looked at the stock? Have you discussed, put in your own mind when you're going to make your entry? Are you going short or are you going long? What's the market doing? If the market is up 200 points, probably that short you had planned probably wouldn't be a good time to take it. You have to be able to flow with the direction of the market. If you're a swing trader, when did you decide you wanted to enter a particular trade? 5 minutes ago? You're not a swing trader, if that's the case. You need to look at these charts beforehand. If you're not, then you all of a sudden you've gone from swing trader to scalper or day trader. Supposing you wanted to take a short on an option and you were looking at the option, you've decided what puts you wanted to get into, and you turn around and the market's up. Now all of a sudden that put is not really going to come into play, at least for a little while. So what do you do? Have you considered long trades for the morning? It's nice to be able to want to go just in one direction. I myself prefer to do shorts or puts. But if the market runs the other way, you have to be able to change your way of thinking and look for the longs as well. You can't be myopic and only look for one type of a particular trade. Just as you can't necessarily continue to try to trade a particular segment of the market. If you have a certain group of stocks that you like to trade and none of them look good, for heaven's sake, don't force the trade. You should have others set up already before the market opens to be able to watch during the morning. Yeah, the only other thing I was going to say was basically if you've been burned before by early entries in the market, avoid amateur hour. Are your favorite stocks underperforming? Hey, you need to look elsewhere. Stocks have a tendency to run in different time frames, I guess you could say. Certain months are hot, certain months are not.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. We were talking about that the other day where coal stocks could do no wrong, and now look at the coal stocks. So they do.
Many of these have been beaten down. It's incredible.
You have to watch your sector rotations. That's why people who work with a small group make sure that they have representation in all the major sectors and industry groups that they feel will move.
Don't limit yourself to a long or a short. You have to be prepared in the event that the market goes the opposite direction so you'll still have a trade.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you again for being with us. As usual, these are helpful tips. Especially the part about planning, because a lot of people think you could just show up at 9:15 or 9:30 and try to find something. Of course you can, but then you're no longer a swing trader or a position trader, you're a scalper.
That's the nice thing about the PTS setups, Mel, because you provide both longs and shorts for the market, and there's always a trade available.
Oh, I want to thank you again, Mike, and we'll see you again next week. Now we're going to take a quick look at how U.S. securities regulators will consider four proposals to restrict short selling. Of course, they're blaming short selling for the decline in the market. Right. Had nothing to do with the bubbles. One of the proposals has the SEC, and the meeting will be this Wednesday, I believe, restoring the uptick rule, which allowed short sales only when the last sale price was higher than the previous price. Well, from my experience going back to when we had the uptick rule, it never had anything to do with me going long or short. If I decided to short a stock, I shorted it. As a matter of fact, I trade usually through ARCA, and I don't think they even observe the uptick rule, because every time I placed an order to sell short, I was filled immediately. Nonetheless, they're going to consider re-implementing that. They're looking at four different proposals, and one of them does include the original uptick rule. There are different modified versions because the markets have changed a lot since 2007. Other proposals at the table include a so-called bid test and a circuit breaker. Details were not provided on how the bid test or circuit breaker could work and did not elaborate on the fourth proposal. One source familiar with the matter said the SEC bid test proposal would only allow shorting at a price above the highest available bid. The source wished to remain anonymous. The proposal for the updated version of the uptick rule would apply to all stocks. The SEC is crafting two circuit breaker proposals. One would temporarily halt short sales of the stock if the stock has already fallen by a certain percentage, the source said. Great if we're in the middle of a wonderful trade. The other would trigger the application of an uptick rule or bid test after the price of a stock experienced a decline by a certain percentage, such as 10%. This version of the circuit breaker is similar to a suggestion put forth by the operators of the top U.S. exchanges, including the New York, the NASDAQ, and BATS exchange. Of course, the SEC abolished the uptick rule in 2007 after studies concluded that advances in trading strategies had rendered it ineffective. Abusive short selling has gone unaddressed for too long and simply must end if the SEC is to restore investor confidence in the markets. Six senators, including Democrats Carl Levin and Edward Kaufman, a Republican, Arlen Specter, said in a recent letter to the SEC, "We believe Congress will need to consider legislation that directs the SEC to do so," the senators said in a letter. Wow, it's amazing what they don't know about the markets. Of course, we always have the option of buying puts, but they're not addressing that. Billionaire investor George Soros said Monday that he favored a reintroduction of some kind of a rule to restrict short selling. Quote, "You do need to provide some protection against effectively stopping the bear raids," Soros told Reuters Financial Television. Well, I thought it was worth mentioning some of the idiocy that's going on. The complete collapse of our economy is blamed on some short selling, as if that's what brings stocks down. It doesn't. But they could very well, if they get their way, destroy a lot of trading careers. I don't think it'll happen. And as usual, whenever they have a rule, we always find a way around it. In this case, it might be the use of options. It might also involve trading offshore. In any event, we'll follow this closely and with a great deal of interest. We've got Jay Woods back with us. This is his third visit to the broadcast. Jay was a newbie when back in October.
Yep. September.
And actually,
I went to your June class, but I didn't do it for like 2.5-3 months.
Well, it's a lot of fun bringing you back because it's fun watching you grow as a trader. You've had a lot of success. In fact, first of all, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Mel, very much.
And one of the things we can learn from, and I know it's not possible, but have you ever lost a trade or had any problems?
Yeah, I lost a lot in the beginning, and I still lose them every now. I still lose a trade every now and then.
Well, what happens if you lose a trade? Do you just quit trading, or?
Oh no! Well, here's the rule that I try and live by, and sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. First, when you first start, you seem to lose quite a bit of money, because then the second part is you make a little bit of money, but you kind of learn how to limit your losses versus taking the big hit, and then third, you start making money because you don't make
the dumb mistakes, like, you know, when something's going against you, there's no reason to stay there. Get out, regroup, hop back in.
Well, what mistake have you made recently that you won't make again?
Well, I can tell you exactly. I was actually on the SRS, and I was in for 200 shares. The thing had a $7 or $8 rundown. So I'm saying to myself, I anticipated, which was the wrong thing to do, I anticipated what was going to happen before it actually happened. So in my head, I was telling myself, this thing's got to reverse and go long. So instead of waiting for the signal, I just went ahead and anticipated, because I said, okay, it'll do it, okay? I put in my 200 shares. It kept going downward. Then all of a sudden, it went down some more, another $3. So I said, okay, I'm just going to double down. I'm going to buy 200 more shares. Okay, I buy into that. The thing goes down even more. So at that point, I'm down approximately, if I'm not mistaken, it was right about, you know, $1,600, $1,800. Then we go into the next day. Then the thing tanks down even goddamn more. So at that point, I ended up losing a total of $3,600 on that one trade.
And what's the lesson from that?
Limit your losses. When something's going against you, just get out. There's no reason to stay there and get hammered. And the other thing I learned, just don't even mess with equity trades. Use options. Options are the way to go. On that trade alone, I had risked over, I think, about $30,000, if not more. Okay, on my average option trade, I usually never have any more than $3,000 to $5,000 on any option trade ever.
There's another lesson too, which is don't anticipate.
Oh, absolutely. Don't anticipate, and if you make a mistake, get out, regroup, let the thing run, and then hop in.
Don't ever
anticipate. I mean, I was sitting there every channel on every chart, all the way from the one all the way up to the weekly, was pointing down at an extreme angle. And the market was down that day. And actually, it was an ultra short, so it was actually up a little bit. And I'm trying to go basically counter to what the market is doing. So I'm fighting the charts to get the trade because I assume, since it was down $6 or $7, that it's going to reverse up so I could be there for a quick scalp. Never assume.
You've got to actually wait till everything is correct. Otherwise, the market's going to surprise you a lot. I saw a surprise today. I was pretty darn sure something was grossly overbought, and I said, why wait? I could go ahead and get puts on it right now. I'll wait till after lunch. I come back after lunch, it's up another $3.
Yes.
It wasn't going to come down. Jay, now that you've had a lot of bumps in the road and you're learning all the time, how's your trading going lately? We asked you that back in December. Now we're asking you that many months later. How's your trading going now?
Oh, my trade is going great. I mean, I go through some stints where I make some mental errors. But for the most part, I mean, I win a lot more than I lose. I mean, even that week that I had that one trade that lost me $3,588, I still ended up making $1,500 for that week. Now, granted, it would have been a lot better not to lose that $3,500. But, you know, you live and you learn. Expensive lesson. It'll never happen again.
What's the best trade you've had this current week?
The best trade I've had this current week actually was a combination of trades. I had some options on TXT, and I bought them a couple days ago. I mean, I saw some information on it. I was looking at a whole bunch of different websites looking for things, and I went and saw the option action on it, and the options were, you know, they were very 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 cheap, and I think I eventually bought 30 contracts of TXT. That were going to expire in May, and I bought them for a cost average of about, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was like $1.05, and at that point I had an 80 delta. So for approximately a stock that cost about $9, I got 80% of the move by paying a total of $1.05 per share. So I bought 30 contracts, so I paid $1.05 for 30 contracts, which would be 3,000 shares. So it would be $1.05 times 3,000. Then, okay, you sit there and you let it wait. I was fairly sure this thing was going to keep on going up. So what I did is, as it was going up, I had it for a couple days, and then I came back and something finally happened with it, and that $3,000 trade made me over $15,000 in 2 days.
Well, that's excellent. I noticed that you step into trades in sections. You don't necessarily take your whole
position.
Absolutely.
You stagger your way, and that's the beauty of options. Like, for example, sometimes when you're trading equity trades, okay, you hop in, the market maker looks at you, and all of a sudden you're in the thing, and he'll run it $2 or $3 against you, okay? But the beauty of options is you can stagger your position in, okay? And not to mention the fact that you're getting something with a delta that you'll be comfortable with. Not only are you buying things for discounted price, but you are getting a good portion of the move and with the most you can lose is the amount of you paid for the option. So you can have maximum gain with minimum loss.
Now, to those people who are listening and thinking about this, these are not necessarily for scalps. These are positions you're going to hold for a day or 2 days or 3 days or 5 days. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes you still want to follow the rules of the charts. I mean, you still want to be hopping at the tops and bottoms of channels. But what I do is I do a lot of research when it comes to, I read a whole bunch of newspapers trying to find any information I can find, because information seems to be driving this market with volatility. There's a lot of psychology going on with this market. And what basically happens is people pile on. So the quicker you can find out the information that's going on, the more you can use it to your advantage. And that's exactly what I did with that trade. I mean, I got information on it, I was looking at it, and then I saw over the past couple of days the thing was just steadily channeling on up, had great volume, had a lot of open interest. So I hopped in and gave it a whirl. I mean, I risked, when I first bought, I just bought 10 contracts. So for about $1,050, I had 80% of the move on a stock that I think at that time was about $8.
On that particular trade, was there some particular chart or time frame that you were keying off of?
I was keying off them all, because since I was doing option, I want to make sure that the longer-term charts are doing especially well. So what I was looking for is for a longer-term chart to be channeling upward, which that stock at that time was, which was TXT. And when I got into that option, every chart was pointing in the up direction. And for the most part, they were channeling from about probably the 90 on up.
Now, during this period, did you ever have something like a five-minute chart or something go against you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's where you kind of have to wait it out. So if you hop in at tops and bottoms of channels, okay, and there's sometimes where I'll hop into one and they try and jam it against me. And if they put it far enough against me, what I will do is I'll just break down and I'll buy 10 more contracts. So if it goes against me, to say, for example, if I buy it for $1.05 and that option goes down to where it costs, let's just say, hypothetically, 50 cents, okay, I would buy 10 more contracts at the 50 cents, which means when this thing reverses, I have 2,000 shares going back the other way, bringing my cost average down from $1.05 to probably about 75 cents.
Now, you realize, of course, you're breaking a trader rule, which is never average down. But that's because I think you're secure enough with the charting to read it and realize that you're going to win.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to reverse, just a matter of when. And that's why when I'm trading these things, if I'm going for a longer-term play, I always make sure I have about 6 weeks. I've never been in an option that took me longer than 5 days to clear out, ever.
Now, they don't always reverse. There was a period, you remember, the last time we went down and hit those lows back last fall. They just kept going down and down.
They kept going down, 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 and down some more. But when the market's going downward, I'm not going long. I'm always going, whatever day I hop in, I'm always going with the trend of the market. So if that day, if the market is going upward, I'm going long. If the market is going downward, I'm going short.
That's good, because a lot of people think this is a mechanical system.
There's a lot of variables.
And they don't really need to pay attention to what the markets are doing.
Yeah, that is, and I think volume. You want to have good volume. Volume is as important as the top and bottom of channel. Because a lot of times these guys can manipulate the market when there's not a lot of volume going in there. So what you do is you look and see what kind of trades are coming through. If you're going long on something, you want to see on the shorter charts. You want to see on the 5 minute, the 15. You want to see these green candles going upward, and you want these things to be staggering upward to where you're seeing more and more green as you go on. That's where you want to go long. The last thing you want to do is go long on something that has one big green candle, then you see a bunch of small red ones.
Jay, of course, we're running out of time. Is there any word of advice you'd like to give our traders?
Practice and work at it real hard. In fact, what everyone should do is you should get a lesson with Mike Mizunas, and you should go ahead and practice doing what you're supposed to be doing. Learn options. Options will save you the aggravation of these market makers trying to switch things around, and it limits your risk. That's the key to it. With this volatility in this market, you want to limit your risk. And the more you can limit your risk, the more money you can make.
Now, Jay, as somebody who's used this platform for a relatively short period of time, do you think PTS is difficult to learn?
No, it's not. No, the charting itself is easy to learn. It's just a matter of learning how to interpret all the signals that takes more time. This, by far, is the best platform out there, in my opinion. It's clean. You get all the information you need. And, I mean, like I said, when I follow the rules correctly, I don't really lose trades. It's only when I get greedy that I lose trades.
Well,
always wait for the charts to listen to you. And just keep the news on in the background, but trust your charts more than you like the news.
Jay, I'm going to definitely, we're going to keep bringing you back periodically because it's fun to watch you grow. This is the third time. The first time you had just won 36 trades or something.
Oh, yeah, it was like 18 in a row. And you know what's funny is as I learn more, it just seems like I forget the basic lessons, you know, and I have to go back and regroup. And then once I get it, once I have one bad trade, all of a sudden I get my focus back and then I'll win like 15 in a row.
Well, Jay, as usual, it was great having you on the broadcast, and we look forward to having you back very soon.
All right, Mel, you have a nice night.
No broadcast would be complete without at least a quick look at our two complimentary setups for the coming week. The first is ARE. ARE. It's a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. They're one of the most active sectors right now. It has a daily range of $3.45, and I wrote, it'll probably continue up if the rally continues. Watch the volume, because it's already made a big move. Let's take a look at the charts in ARE. If you have PTS charting, that'll make it even easier for you. There's really nothing exciting here. When you look at the week, you can see that it was on its way down. It got interrupted by the rally. It's moved up quite a bit, about 4 points. It's getting very overbought on the midterms, particularly the 180. If you go down to a 90 or even a 45, you'll see it getting overbought. There's a very good chance this will roll over short if the market does a correction. Our other complementary setup is SHLD, commonly referred to as SHIELD. That's Sears and Kmart. I wrote there is a little more long, or a little more to this long, but we expect it to short this week. If the rally continues all week, SHIELD could move up to the 200-day moving average, which is up at 59. Now, of course, that's a retail department store with an average true daily range of $3.39. If you want to take a look at the charts, you can see that the week ran into the 32-week moving average and started to bend down. And then, of course, we got caught up in this rally on Thursday, Friday, and it's going back up again. It's not quite overbought yet, so I expect if Monday is a positive open, it will continue up. Notice all the buying coming in as we went into the close, so there's still buyers. I think we'll get a short out of it this week, but first we're going to go through a long. You notice the 200-day moving average on SHIELD is up around 59.38. We're at 52. Is there room to climb? Oh, there's plenty of room for this to go up some more. I do want to mention that the PTS course is a little bit less than a month away. If you haven't yet had a chance to take it, this is your chance. It's May 4th and 5th. The information is on the PTS website. You'll see it on the PTSradio.com. There will not be another course for 5 or 6 months. It'll be next fall before you'll have another chance. PTS is very powerful. If you know how to use it, it's the way to go. I want to thank our sponsors, Noble Trading and TradingComputers.com, for their support of the broadcast. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. If you did send in questions and we didn't get to them because we had a lot to do today, I promise we'll get to your questions on the next broadcast. Have a great trading week. This is your host, Mel Raymond, and I'll see you in the markets.